Welcome at Planetary Health Talks, the podcast in which we invite professionals and enthusiasts in the field of planetary health. We discuss its importance, interconnectedness, and application in our everyday lives. This podcast is presented to you by the Knowledge Center Global Health, hosted by Ashish Brahma, that's me, and co-hosted by
Renee Robbers, that's me.
It's 22nd of November, 2022. We are here with Planetary Health Talks. I am Ashish Brahma and my co-pilot is
Renee Robbers.
Hello. Welcome. And of course, our special guest, Arthur Groenewegen. Welcome.
Thank you.
Arthur, you used to be a speed skater. Do you think you're going to still skate on nature ice or not?
Well, that has been a long time ago that I did that for the last time. So I don't think that there will be a lot of opportunities in the future.
So no Elfstedentocht for Holland?
No, unfortunately not.
Things are changing. When you were very young, not like you when you're young, but when you were very young, what was your dream? What did you want to become when you were big?
I wanted to become a psychiatrist for children soldiers.
Wow. It's like heavy duty straight away.
Yes.
Have you always been so serious?
Yeah, but with a lot of playfulness and positive energy.
Because some people have this issue with injustice. They just can't handle it and they want to do something about it. And you're talking with somebody like that. Because I worked with child soldiers and it's painful to see what happens.
I can imagine.
Yeah. So I'm just a mere medical doctor. And you are as well, right?
Not yet. I'm in my fifth year of medical school. So one more year to go.
So we call you a young doctor?
Yes, definitely.
Great. Superb. So when you were young, were you also very much involved in nature? Did you like to play in the mountains or on the sea or whatever? Where do you come from?
Well, I lived in Deventer, so there are not really mountains over there.
But there's a river.
Maybe, yeah, there's a river and the Holterberg, so that's a small hill. And I love to be in nature, definitely, to climb in trees and to build huts and, to search for leaves. And I went to a Waldorf Schule.
What does that mean, a Waldorf Schule? Because I don't know Waldorf ice cream.
No. It's a school more of from Rudolf Steiner. His philosophy, the anthroposophy.
Yes.
Anthroposophy.
It's the same in English, yes.
Mm-hmm. So I was stimulated a lot to be in nature while being a young child.
And your friends and family also all interested in nature or just you?
Until a certain level, I think there are definitely people who are more interested in nature, but they love to be in nature. And we always went camping and liked outdoorsy things.
If you ask me where's my state of bliss, I would say it's in the mountains, in the Himalaya, walking alone, 5,000 meters, 6,000 meters, and enjoying the fresh air and the silence.
Yes.
Less is more. But now you're in your fifth year, and I think you've achieved something marvelous. You've come together with a group of people. You started this initiative. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, thank you for the compliment. I am part of the CO2 assistant. That's a joke from co-assistant that are the medical students working in the hospital. And we are a group of students who think that planetary health should be integrated in the medical curriculum. We were all really amazed why we didn't learn anything about the health effects of the climate change. So I searched for peers and also other people who thought the same. And then we started talking with teachers, with other students. And we came up with this initiative, which is 2 years, 2.5 mm-hmm. years ago now.
How do you build a movement?
By
if this is your passion.
Yeah, I think just to look for other people who are also interested in the same topic and then start talking with people.
Breaking bread, eating together, having fun, playfulness,
definitely.
Homo ludens, the creative, playful man and woman. But what really happened with that CO2 assistant? Because you created a curriculum, because a lot of people wouldn't know what it means. You know, the medical curriculum is kind of tight. It takes 10 years to change. So there's these young, bright, up, star shining eyes who want to change the curriculum. And how does that work?
How does that work? Well, there's still no curriculum, but we are now really working on making it together with many people. How does it work? You start reading about the effects of climate change on the healthcare sector, on health, and you start reading about planetary health and about equity and social justice and biodiversity loss. And by learning together about all these topics, while doing that, we started talking to people and questioning, like, why don't we learn anything about this? And then...
That's how you create webinars. That's how you create modular education online or live.
Yeah, but that's also the way how we created awareness within the medical teachers pool in Utrecht. But we also created awareness in other cities. For example, in Amsterdam, there's also a CO2 assistant right now. So we made our movement bigger and just started questioning.
Are you growing exponentially or linear?
I think circular.
That's very good. But so this modular teaching, this modular training, do you use serious gaming?
Definitely. We in Utrecht there is the 2040 spell, through a game, people learn about the Sustainable Development Goals, SDGs. So that's one part of the one example of serious gaming. That we didn't make it, but there were already a lot of teachers and innovative people in Utrecht who made it. And we now implement it in the introductory week in Utrecht.
Do you think that most of your year mates, your classmates, your batch mates, whatever you want to call them, are interested in planetary health, or is this just the happy few, as Margaret Mead would say? It's only a few people that actually make the change. Or is it really a movement that is interest to most of your year mates?
I think not everybody knows the concept of planetary health, but I think many people are interested in parts of it. More and more people want to learn about the health effects of climate change. And they also want to learn more about how to be a sustainable doctor. There was an enquête,
A survey
done in 2021 by the geneeskunde student, and they asked a lot of students if they wanted to learn more about the health effects of climate change and how to be a sustainable doctor, and if they thought that doctors should be more active in the public debate about climate change. And they were all like, the answers were all around the 80% and the 70%, so definitely all around.
So it's a big topic.
Definitely.
Unlike the dinosaurs like me, 51 years old, I don't see the same urgency in my group. Although I do see a lot of people who are around my age who are interested. It's not like 80% at all. So I hope they wake up and listen to the youth, because it's the future. Another source to listen to is indigenous people. They seem to be more in a thrivable condition where they actually do not exploit nature, but they actually live in harmony with nature. What can we learn from these people?
Yes, indigenous people. I am really interested in them and in their wisdom, because I think that they already embody or practice the core of planetary health, namely that everything is connected. And they, yeah, they really understand that to be healthy, we, well, that our health depends on the ecosystem that we are part of. So that we should take care of trees, of plants, of our soil, that, for example, to build a house, you need rain, you need clouds, you need a tree, you need a person who cut the trees, you need food for the person to eat in order for the person to cut the tree. So they really have a deep understanding of this interconnectedness, and therefore they are really grateful for nature. And yeah, for me also, that's the to tell a bit about. A couple years ago, I got the chance to cycle around Colombia for 6 months, and I got in contact with indigenous people as well. Mm-hmm. That was really special. And before that, I knew about this interconnectedness, but they, like, also through that travel, I really experienced the interconnectedness, because I was outside all the time. The sun was shining, but then the clouds came to protect myself from the sun. Mm-hmm. I was bathing in the rivers. I saw all the food and the soil, and immediately ate that food. And then I also met indigenous people who told me again about this interconnectedness, and told me to be grateful actually for nature and for every part of it.
A beautiful and humbling experience. I love mm-hmm. Colombia. It's one of the warmest people on the planet that I know, at least. And I had the luxury of traveling a lot, but it was one of my favorite places to go to Colombia. So, yeah, and especially the history, you know, look at the history of what happened to the people who were originally there, yes. And what happened with all these invading people. You know, those people, what we sometimes call capitalist or exploitative, whatever you want to call it, how Europe became rich. So we're talking about, this is the age of, sometimes we call it Anthropocene, but you had a different word for it, right?
Yes, indeed. I'm taking a minor in degrowth. And within that minor, they briefly said it's not the Anthropocene, but it's capitalist scene. Mm-hmm. Because it are not all people who did this, but it are especially the people who are captured within this capitalist system, capitalistic system. And also talking about injustice, there are many people living in the global south who didn't cause this problem of climate change mm-hmm. and biodiversity loss and the ecological crisis that we are in. It's really the global north who did it.
Yes, and what I see is that there's 1.3 million billion people living in India, 1.2 billion people living in China, and who's going to stop them from getting a car? Mm-hmm. My family's from India, and I understand that they also want to have a car,
yes,
and they want
course.
To travel. And so that's 2.5 billion people. So how are we going to create degrowth when people just ask for what other people have been using freely for the last 40 years, 50 years, maybe 100 years? How are we going to address this issue?
Well, I think there within the degrowth movement, there's a really big agenda. But for me personal, the thing that I'm really interested in is our mindset. Right now, we are really focusing on growth of mm-hmm. economic growth. But the degrowth movement is saying that that's not possible. There's not such a thing as green growth, for example, because maybe within the reducing our CO2 emissions. But by doing that, we are using more and more electric cars. And for all these cars, we need materials. And these materials are coming from, for example, Congo, or also China has a lot of materials.
Yes. So we're getting into the next news after the Russian gas. Now we're going to the Chinese metals that are very important, like cobalt. So mm-hmm. we're entering the next trap.
Definitely, yes. And therefore, I think it's a really, this material crisis is going to be really big. And we are now, if we want green growth, we can only do that through taking a lot of materials also from the global south. So that's continuing colonialism for me. But I think that we need to change our mindset from focusing on money and on more stuff and materials, to more focusing on climate, on health, on equity, on relationships. Mm-hmm. So also seeing, I already talked about gratitude, and I really like in the book of Joanna Macy, Active Hope. She's saying that gratitude is the antidote for consumerism. So I think also gratitude is a really powerful weapon which we can use to change from consumerism, and that we should more focus on health, for example, as a new value, and about climate than on economic growth.
So how does that relate to Ubuntu, for example?
That's a great question. First of all, because I really like that we can learn a lot from the Global South. Right now, we really think like, oh, we are superior to those people and we know everything, but we can actually learn a lot from different, from indigenous people, from Africa, South Africa, from Buddhism. And within Ubuntu, they really focus on the we as a whole, instead of I as an individual. So I think that's also the place where we need to go to right now. That's also what I see in my surroundings, that there's a lot of competition. More for me means less for you, or mm-hmm. More for you means less for me. So we see each other as competitors instead of, that we are all connected. So if it's going well with you, then that means that's also going good with me. And I think that's part of Ubuntu. They really focus on the community as a whole instead of more of individuals.
So these values in the West, I don't know why that is, but it's come to be a more individualistic society, and you're younger than I am. Mm-hmm. And I think my people, 51 years old, are already focused on themselves. But I see youth as well, on the one hand, very much focused on the larger picture, but also very much focused on themselves. Mm-hmm. So what can we do to shift that thought, that consciousness? What do you need to do?
Because I really think that this is really essential if we want to move forward to a more sustainable world. I think gratitude, cultivating gratitude, mm-hmm. Is really important, because if you focus on what you already have, then you're less greedy to get more stuff or to be in competition with others. I would say go into nature. That really gives me always a good feeling, and I feel the connection with nature, and it makes me more quiet, more peaceful. On a bigger scale, more external, we can also get rid of reclame.
Commercials
mm-hmm. who focus on that we need more stuff, that mean you're not good enough, therefore you need to buy this new makeup because otherwise you don't look well. Or
it's hard to undo a capitalistic system where you're bombarded through Facebook or TikTok or Instagram or Snapchat with instant and complete total recognition that you are a wallet.
Yes,
as a human being.
But that's the main transition that we need to go to. I do not live in order to provide more profit for the economic system, but the economic system and all the commercials, they are there to provide my well-being instead of that I'm a slave of the economy. Mm-hmm. That we focus more on health, on well-being, on relations instead of economic growth. And that's also Zorg voor Klimaat, de Duurzame Verpleegkundige en de CO2...
Three Dutch organizations, yes, very
CO2
good.
Stand. Yes. We wrote a letter to the different ministries in which we said many things, but one of the things was take climate, equity and health into all the decision-making programs. So if you're making a decision, ask yourself, what does this decision do to the climate? What does it do to equity? And how can it improve health instead of only focusing on the money?
So if people have the power, we should also think about our future generations, right? So right now we're thinking about extracting as much profit from what is in Japan or in other countries, they take into account through civilian groups for future policy making, the future generations. They have a say. Mm-hmm. It's not happening right now. So that maybe would be an answer to how to involve a different mindset. And do you see that happening in Holland? Do you see people getting involved and thinking about what's going to happen to the next generation or the generation after?
Yes, more and more. I do not really see it in politics yet, but at least on television, but maybe in the rooms they do. But I see more and more people becoming aware of the next generations and what our activities, how that influence the next generations.
Yeah, so you're involved in policy influencing.
Yes, a bit, definitely.
That's good, because big companies have a lot of influence, right? But the other thing is activism. Mm-hmm. Can you say something about Extinction Rebellion? Is that a road to go to make sure that there's attention for topics about this climate, about the planetary health? Is that the way forward?
Well, I also participated in some Extinction Rebellion activities, and I think it's a way forward, but I think that there are many way forwards. So I think companies have a big role, but I think every individual has a big role. And that we can all search for one part that we are like really attached to, and find peers. That's also what we did. I felt really attached to why don't I learn anything about this topic within the medical curriculum, and then I searched other people, and then we just started doing anything. So I'm really aware on how big the influence of an individual can be. I did not even finish my med school, and I'm now already like rewriting my own curriculum and the things that I'm going to learn next year. So I think that we can do a lot, and especially in these times of chaos where there's a lot of things going on in the world, only a small thing can become really big, and especially right now, because there's a lot of chaos and there's a lot of transitions going on, and therefore I also feel special that I'm born I was born in this period of time, that I can see all this happening in the world, and hope to be.
You know what the Chinese say, may you be born, may you live in interesting times, which is actually a curse.
Oh really?
Yeah, it's a hard one. Yeah, because these are very interesting times. What I find very interesting is that we are focusing on planetary health, and we're actually in the midst of a fourth industrial revolution, and that transition to Internet of Things and the capacity for technology, artificial intelligence, big data, drones, all these things more are absolutely not in the medical curriculum, and there seems to be no attention to it. So if the world changes so rapidly that in the past it took the first industrial revolution about 100 years to take place, the second 50 years, the third 25, and this one take 10 years, and it's not in the medical curriculum, and you focus on the planet, but we have technology developing, isn't that a big issue as well?
Well, we are actually focusing also on, or I'm not, because
can't do everything.
I can do everything,
you
and
can do a lot.
I can do a lot. But I would like to do the things that I'm passionate about, and I would love other people to do other things that they are passionate about. But we work together. For example, yesterday I had a meeting in Utrecht of someone who is discussing what about medical technologies, what we should learn about, and how we can implement that in the new medical curriculums. And we had a discussion about what I already told about the materialistic part of all the technologies and all the metals that we need for that. How can we include that in the education as well? This awareness of what it means if we want more technology, what it does to to the global south or China and the crisis of the materials.
I'm going to revisit your dream, because when you were young, you said you want to be a psychiatrist for child soldiers, and now you're no longer a child. And now you have the opportunity to, again, what is your dream? What do you want to do when you grow up? Or you never want to grow up?
Yeah, well, I hope that I can forever be childish and playful and have this childish curiosity to things. I hope that I never become a fully adult. And my dream for the future, I don't know what the future will look like, but I know that I want to work with people together in connection with nature, with people, to improve health and to strive for a more just world.
When I was your age, 1994, there was a slaughter that took place in Somalia first and then in Rwanda. Mm-hmm. And the world didn't care. 1 million people got killed, and then 300,000 people got killed in Congo and the big African war, which could be considered a world war as mm-hmm. well. And this inspired me to do something about my feeling that injustices should not be possible. So I promised that I would go and work in this part of the world. And the first job I got when I was qualified as a tropical medical doctor from London was a job in Burundi. So you follow your path and you will go where you want to go. And that's your path. You'll find a way. You go where you want to go. What makes me sad is that you don't know if the world is going to be a safe place, a good place, because you don't know what the future brings. I've seen conflicts. I've seen genocide. And I still believe in hope. The people were there. We're the most powerful people I've ever seen, with resilience, humor, and dignity, and things that we could actually take on board here in Holland. Mm-hmm. Spoiled rats, brats, I should say, not rats, brats. So we sometimes seem to forget that we're very rich. Mm-hmm. But so as we've gone over this whole journey of yours, which is a very short life so far, you've done so much, right? Maybe you want to ask me something, or Renee.
I am wondering, do you feel connected to nature and to everybody who's living on this earth?
Oh, the closest connection you get is when you become a father or a mother. So I'm connected to my kids. And I see the joy they have, the surprise. And I will never grow up just like you. I'll remain curious about what's going on in the world. And the best place to do that is when you walk in the mountains, or when you swim in the sea, or when you roll about in the forest, and when you climb in a tree. Old men can also climb very fast. And I love the birds. I love the songs of the birds. And I love the wind. And I notice the sun. Every day I don't see the sun or the moon is a day I did not live. So yes, I am connected to this planet and the entire universe. Because that's what it's about, being connected. That's what you taught me. We need to be interconnected.
That's beautiful. And René, is there something that you are grateful to or for?
There are many things that I'm grateful for, actually. Well, relating to the question that you just asked about the connection to nature, I think I am very grateful for also feeling that connection to nature. My dad is a microbiologist, and I was raised in a relatively tiny village in the Netherlands, surrounded by a lot of nature, and we spend a lot of time there, so I'm very, very grateful for that. And also relating what you just said is, my mom always told me that to never lose your childness, your playfulness, and I think I'm also grateful for that. So And I think right now it's so important to feel connected to nature because of, well, obviously everything that we're talking about right now. So, yeah, that's what I'm grateful for. And you?
Well, thank you for sharing. And in reaction on you, it made me, in presentations, I sometimes say, like, we have a lot to lose, but a world to win. And that, yeah, that came up into my head when you were both describing all these beauties in the world that I really want to strive for. I'm grateful that I dare to start together with many other people these initiatives, the CO2 assistant, and that we became so big, and that it made me realize that you as a person can change the system. And because humans shape systems and systems shape humans. So for this awareness that we can actually do something, I'm really grateful, because it gives me meaning in life. I love it that I can shape the future a bit, help shaping it. And I would love to invite others also to search, what do I want? How do I want to make impact? And are there other people who think the same? And just go and, that we start doing it all together, and not only saying, well, the politics should do it, and looking to the ministries, but power to the people, I would say, because I also would like to go to a more horizontal society, mm-hmm. in which there's less top-down movements, but more horizontal and more focusing on collaborations and working together. We can start doing that today.
Right now. Right here.
Indeed.
Right now. Mm-hmm. Right here. Fatboy Slim. Wonderful. Wonderful. And Yoda would say, don't try, do. And I would say, less is more. And more is less. I love your story. I love your shares. I love the fact that you're connected to nature and indigenous people, and you think about the larger system, that it's about we and not me, that it's about you can change. Margaret Mead always says, it takes only a small group of inspired people to make a difference. And indeed it does. And that could be you. And that is probably you. And that's why you're sitting here, to share your story. And then when it comes to knowledge and sharing of knowledge, we need to open the book, but listen with our ears and listen with our heart to what nature is whispering to us. We look at the past, we look at the future, we look at the present, and we look at everything that the youth brings to us. We don't have to talk about COP27, we won't. We talk about the difference that you make every day. You're awake.
I try to, yes.
And you're conscious. You're reaching for the stars. Shoot for the moon, reach the stars. Thank you very much, Arte. Thank you very much, Renee. Thank you very much, Tessa, for this interview.
Thank you very much, Aziz.
It's been a blast.
Thank you.
Loving it. Bye.